Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. This is, of course, a festive season. We want to make sure that we spread the fun and joy and love and ensuring that we are continuously updated with all the news out there, albeit in the comforts of our own home because, of course, COVID cases are rising and celebrating Hari Raya in an MCO is a very strange mode, but I still have friends joining us in this show. Wong Wai Ken, the country manager of Stashaway. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Ibrahim. Nice to be with you. And I had hopes to attend Astro's open house this year, but looks like we'll have to wait a while. But anyway, well, it's a good measure to stay safe and then celebrate when we can.
How about your vaccination programs? Are you signing up for anything?
Personally, first of all, I'm very glad that the AstraZeneca vaccine is open to those who volunteer on a first-come, first-served basis. I think it's good decision-making by the government to take sentiment into account, but also look at the data and the overall ramifications on the economy. So I think that's a very good move. Personally, I know a lot of colleagues of mine who have signed up for the AstraZeneca vaccine. I myself am waiting, mainly because if I take the AstraZeneca vaccine, it's not like I can travel or do anything new. So I'm just going to wait for the normal centralized vaccination program before I get mine. But I encourage everyone to take it and make the choice based on data and science.
So this is the whole point, right? People like you and me, we both have different paths of decision making, but the point is that the choice was there, and for me, I took up the choice. And to be frank, during the frantic mode of registration, I really don't know what center I chose, when I chose it. I just whacked it. that anxious wait of 48 hours, and then then I realized, oh, I chose this center at that date at this time. I'm like, okay lah. Again, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. It is Raya festive season, and in hindsight, it's not that both of us can go anywhere either, but I really want to talk about Stashaway. It's always fun to have you guys on. I really wanted to get you in the studio, Ken. I really did, because we have a new studio. It's all, fresh, bau kedai kind of thing. It's a fresh car smell, but yalah, this is how it is. Well, very recently, Stashaway raised $25 million in Series D funding. Sequoia Capital India was part of it. Let's talk about that, the Series D funding.
Sure, yeah. And I very much prefer to be in the studio, but this is, we'll have to make do. We'll cut the ribbon another day. But onto your question, we did indeed raise $25 million US dollars from Sequoia Capital India. And that brings our total fundraising so far since our launch in 2016 to 61 million US. So naturally, this puts us in a very, very good cash position. Our balance sheet is very strong to support the growth of 5 countries, Malaysia included. And naturally, with Sequoia on board, we are very encouraged that a world-class venture capital firm like theirs shares our vision to help investors build long-term wealth.
So one thing interesting is that with a paid-up capital of 60 million US or 61.4 million US, you guys have an AUM or asset under management of over 1 billion US dollars. So that's a remarkable, I guess, parity, right? And I want to understand more about how you're going to use this 25 million US from the Series D funding. How have you been using the past, 40 odd million from the first three series funding? And perhaps try to understand more about what's the path forward.
Yeah, so we're with Sequoia's funding. We were very glad because naturally they have backed some of the world's largest, most notable unicorns in the U.S. Names like Instagram and Airbnb come to mind in the region. Very successful startups like Gojek, Carousel, household names, and they themselves have funded 6 unicorns in India as well. So with the funds that we got from Series C, it was really about getting 3 new markets online, right? Getting them to be able to set up office, hire people, file for the registration in Dubai, Hong Kong, and Thailand. And then with this additional capital, it really allows us to go big in the existing markets and the new markets to go deeper. Because as competition is very very strong because this asset management space is really heating up, especially with digital banking in different countries coming online. So we really need to be prepared, right? We were already in a good financial position, but this really helps us commit to winning and being very large in all those five markets, including Malaysia.
The thing about Sequoia is that they normally lead their investee companies to listing. The timeline may be different. Sometimes they take their time to ensure that the investee companies have all that it takes for it to go public. In other cases, you know, they 1 or 2 years after funding straight away go public. What was the story of going public? Was that a request by Sequoia for Stashaway?
I think we have to look at the right motivations to go public, right? Do you really need the money? Do you want to raise your valuation to a point where you allow your investors to liquidate, right? To go out at a rate that makes their shareholders happy. So for us, there's no real commitment yet to go public, and there's no timeline attached to that. It's more about winning in our markets, because in order to go public, you need to be ready, right? And as we know, with companies like Grab getting into a SPAC to IPO with a US $40 billion valuation, it really puts the spotlight on Southeast Asia, which I think is great. And also it shows that there's multiple routes to an IPO and an exit for that matter, right? So the capital is really there for us to focus on the business, and exit strategy isn't something that we are really thinking of right now, because we are still at a point where we need to scale, introduce new products, be more innovative in our feature design and product design. So there's just so much more to do to build the business, besides thinking about going public, right? We are number one in Singapore and Malaysia for a reason. We have a great product, and we need to keep ahead of the competition and introduce new things. And that's what the capital will help us do.
One thing interesting about the Series D funding is that Abhi Ganan of Sequoia Capital is going to be joining the board of Stashaway pending regulatory approvals. Abhi has had a long history of working with successful companies. And in this part of the world, he is no a stranger towards working with the dynamics of startups / growth companies inside the dynamics of Southeast Asian market. Do you feel interested in like working closely with him? I mean, personally, how do you feel working with the board even across the plethora of markets that you guys operate from?
Yeah, so Sequoia is going to join our board. They will be represented with the likes of Eight Roads, which is Fidelity's VC arm, and SquarePeg as well. So them and the co-founders constitute the board along with our earlier backers. And the board is really there to help us be our partners and think strategically with us to grow in the five markets that we are present right now. There's a lot of complementary strength from people who have had a lifetime in banking and able to grow different markets, and also to help on strategy, fundraising, and to learn from their portfolio companies that they have made very successful, so we can also chart our own way to success. So at a high level, they will be there to be our thought partners. And for more strategic matters like fundraising or market expansion, they will also be there to be a great sounding board. We have a lot to learn, to be honest, from their experiences in the different sectors and different regions in this space.
I just want to learn more about how 2020 will shape up for you and how 2021 will also shape up for you. I think it's important for us to understand what you're going to be using the cash for this year. Is it like a write-off? Do you feel that 2021 is a write-off already in terms of business growth, I mean?
No, absolutely not. So I think 2020 was obviously a very disruptive year for a lot of businesses. For a digital company like ours, operationally, we were sound. It was more about holding our customers' hands to bring them through the crisis as the markets fell, right? So the markets were falling. They were trying to find a floor. It went to minus 20, minus 30, minus 35, and then the Fed came in with quantitative easing, and then that really helped the markets recover, right? So it was really about us communicating to clients that there's no reason to panic. They should look at the long term. We saw a lot of experienced investors actually invest more on our platform. we saw higher digital adoption because people were stuck at home and they had to shop online. They had to do a lot of things virtually, online banking and all that. So naturally, with those adoption habits and with the extra savings that they have, 2020 was the year where robo-advisory platforms like ours actually became the most popular investment destination after stocks and unit trust. So that tells you a lot, right? Stock picking and stock markets have been around forever. Unit trust have been around for 30 years. We are barely even 3 years old, and already we are in the top three. So those savings are going into a variety of investment options, including ours. I'm sure you also remember the 2020 rubber glove boom on the local Malaysian market. So that rise and then moderation and then fall to kind of normalize with the vaccine rollout minted a lot of new wealth, right? And we are seeing some of that. And we are seeing also that some people trading for the first time decide that maybe it's not for them, or they need a more diversified portfolio beyond Malaysia. And that's where we come in. And also we saw Bitcoins hit new highs. So we had people taking profits from cryptocurrencies and coming into StashAway. So people are viewing StashAway in different ways, either to get their first exposure to global markets or really to take profit from other sources. Maybe it's rubber gloves, maybe it's Bitcoin, and then coming into more safer waters like StashAway, which is very diversified. So 2020 by no means was a write-off. It was great. 2021 is building on the strength of 2020. Late 2020, we also launched our cash management product, StashAway Simple, which yields 2.4% for your spare cash. That really helped us hit an inflection point where we went exponential, if I were to use that term. And the first quarter was great for us. It was great, you know, because I think it's a accumulation of us stewarding our customers very well in 2020. And the strong growth after the Biden administration came in, the good investment returns really spurred people to put in more money and refer their friends and bring in new money as well. So that's paying off. That's why I say for 2020 and 2021, Malaysia is doing really well.
I think we want to talk a little bit more about the economic conditions of the country, but we'll go for a short break. When we come back, we will have more with Wong Wai Kan of StashAway. Thanks for staying on with us. We have Wong Wai Kan of StashAway. Ken, this week we're going to see the GDP for first quarter to be announced. There's some expectations that it's going to be softer than initially projected. Bank Negara projects 6-7%, but SERC, the economic research, Lee Heng Gee was arguing that it might softer at 4%, and this is partly due to the COVID MCO restrictions that was imposed early on in January. Mm-hmm. Domestic consumption is also going to be low, at least for the second quarter for this year. People normally spend, but they don't because of COVID. People would normally shop online, but it's not that kind of prior shop that you would normally see. I mean, you know, we normally splurge a bit, you know, baju raya for everyone, that kind of stuff. So because of the expectations of a softer kind of GDP growth, first quarter and perhaps even the second quarter, this first half is not going to shape up as strong or as robust as we ought to see. And this is coupled with unemployment numbers. Last week, Dawson published the unemployment numbers at 750,000 thereabouts, people being unemployed. And then the thing that caught my attention is the split between the age groups of those unemployed. As we all know, normally it's the young bracket between ages 15 to 35 constituting a large chunk of those being unemployed. Mm. But what I find interesting about the latest numbers that was published is that the elderly, meaning those above 35 to 70 being unemployed grew substantially over the past few quarters. So those two, you know, ahead of those two backdrops, domestic consumption slow, unemployment rate rising, and within that, you know, the elderlies are rising in terms of unemployment. What's the story like for robo-advisors like you guys amidst the economic conditions like this?
Those are very tough local conditions, right? And I think that when we were making those assumptions coming out of negative growth of last year, US went through a technical recession, but bounced out of that as well. It was because of our assumption that it would have a low base effect and it would bounce very strongly outside of that negative range. But I think it's more about sustainable growth. No point having high growth and then for it to moderate very quickly, right? So if we emerge out of the recession slower but more sustainable, in a more sustainable and healthier way from a public health perspective, then that's fine. You know, there will always be hiccups to the vaccine rollout, and because of that, there will be hiccups to the reopening of our borders. I think when we were looking at the blue sky scenario last year, we would think at least that limited international travel would be open by now. You know, at least the border with Singapore and Malaysia, maybe airlines would start operating, but obviously still that's not the case, right? So naturally the growth rate won't be as high. I would say unemployment is a concern, especially for the B40 golongan, right? But I would say that the government's help to have some stimulus and to allow the ISINA program to go ahead, for them to dip into their savings, EPF savings, will help them go through this. And this is why we always urge people to have a healthy emergency fund balance of at least 6 months of your expenses to ride through difficult and tough periods like this. So I think, you know, one thing that helps us locally, in Malaysia specifically, is that the oil price is recovering because of the global recovery, going towards more than 65, going towards $70 will really help us, because crude and also oil derivatives make up close to 10%, I think 7 to 8% of our exports, and a higher price would do well for us, especially since the government budget assumed only 40, 45 ringgit for oil this year, right? So that's the thing about projections. It takes into account the mood of the moment, and if the mood of the moment is not optimistic, then your forecast won't be optimistic, right? So I think it's more important to come out of it in a sustainable way, right? Rather than a rocky kind of up and down way. I think the bigger global theme here is still the global recovery. Naturally, with India, the COVID cases there, you know, very, very heartbreaking. That would slow things down. But with other factors concerned, you know, Biden in the White House, S&P and the NASDAQ making all-time highs, sectors like small caps, consumer discretionary have done very well. Global REITs are also making a comeback. So I think, you know, we just have to stay the course. We have been through tougher times like last year, different corrections as well. So I think it's good for people to start having good habits, or to bring back good habits in terms of their personal finance, and know that on the big global stage, things are improving, and soon the good news will come to Malaysia. We just have to be a little bit more patient.
I think patience is important. It's also important for us to look at what you mentioned just now, which is the global situation. And you're right, in countries like China and the US, China is reporting near zero cases. Folks there are well vaccinated, perhaps using Sinovac. In the US also it's the same story. They are vaccinating close to a million, if not a million a day. And they are well towards achieving herd immunity. And this has impacted, and of course, you were pointing out stability in the White House. That's a key factor moving forward. This is impacting directly the business of Stashaway. You guys are in ETFs, and as long as the global recovery happens, ETFs are doing well. You know, and investors within Stashaway is also looking at that point as well. And you know, dollar cost averaging is one thing. Making sure that you have 6 month cash emergency is another. It's also important for us to look at ETFs, their performance over time. I suspect you're going to say things like ETFs are going to do just fine, but really, honestly, how do you feel ETFs are going to be performing, you know, moving forward?
Yeah, actually, ETFs fund flows have been very strong in this case, mainly because we don't just have one or two ETFs, right? We have 30 to choose from, and each portfolio has different 7 to 9 ETFs in each one. So different sectors have been doing particularly well because of the rotation, right? If we are going away from things like gold and healthcare ETFs, the fund flows and the capital gains are really seen in things like the consumer discretionary space. If you think about your own behavior coming out of the pandemic, you definitely want to spend a little bit more, want a little bit a bit loose in terms of your spending. When borders reopen, maybe go somewhere really nice, spend money. So that's where the consumer discretionary sector comes into play, right? During this riot period, even though you can't see people, don't be kadakola. You can still send people, do it right online, right? Even though you don't salam, you can still send online, right? So that will help consumer discretionary, right? In our case, we've picked a consumer discretionary ETF called XLY. This ETF is used to get consumer discretionary. It has had 17% per annum return over the last 10 years. You know, this is per annum every year, 10 years, 17%, which is really good. So this ETF contains the likes of Amazon, Nike, Tesla, Starbucks, which all benefits when the US economy reopens. Another ETF I want to draw attention to is the China innovation space. China internet stocks have had a very rocky ride. It makes for a very interesting investment case because of the duration, right? If you look at the short term, it came off its highs. Last year, it did 50% gains, which is great. But then after Alibaba's Ant Financial IPO got scrapped and they got fined, and then Meituan is looking at some investigations on their monopoly antitrust practice, which is eerily similar to what's happening in the US with antitrust investigations underway from the likes of Google and Facebook and Amazon and Microsoft. So China is doing the same thing, which is you know, it echoes the sentiment that big tech firms are getting too big. But if we look at the longer term, the China innovation ETF is still very attractive to us, mainly because China as a country has very long-term timelines. And then they want to develop things like the next generation of innovations, right? Semiconductors to serve its own industry, so there's no shortage like we're going through now. Servers and cloud infrastructure that is their own. 5G networks. All of this is to make sure that China has innovation supremacy in the next decade. And even Huawei announced that it was going to launch an electronic vehicle of its own, right? So you can see the rate of innovation there is really, really hot. And to look at the short-term antitrust as a bear case, I think is missing the whole point, right? Because the whole country and the whole sector is still very exciting. So we're still very bullish on China tech, specifically KWEB, the ETF that we also offer in our portfolios.
Ken, I know it's going to be a tough period for everybody, but other than giving interviews on Astro Awani, what are you guys going to do during this Raya period?
Yeah, good question. Maybe it's time to take a little bit of a break and catch up with some loved ones. Personally, I was, you know, for the company anyway, we were planning on doing more firm building and getting to know each other, because we've hired so many people over the last year and not everyone has met everyone.
Yeah.
So we wanted to do more firm building and team building, that kind of thing, but that would obviously have to wait.
Now you have to do the Microsoft Teams or something like that, lah.
Yeah, Microsoft team building and
which is strange to ask me, but
Yeah, but we will just have to be responsible, right? And make sure everyone's okay, make sure everyone's equipped to work from home, and make sure morale is okay. And you know, we're doing very well here in Malaysia, so there's no real need to shake things up, right? We have a great business. It's growing very nicely. And we are also hiring more people in different areas, different departments. We want to have a tech hub here in Malaysia. We want to have IT specialists here as well, online marketing analysts. So we are also looking to grow the team. But yeah, I think a break for the next couple of weeks just to relax a little bit and then to hit the Q2 and Q3 in a big way.
Do you think that StashAway is going to focus more on Malaysia because of our low cost-based structure and perhaps shift some of the team over in Singapore to here?
I don't think we'll shift. I think we'll just hire more out of Malaysia, right? Because there's certain skill sets, especially on the developer side, the tech side, that really is not, you know, here in Malaysia, right? Singapore is a better talent hub for that. But we have actually been quite flexible in hiring people all around the world. I've met new colleagues from Russia, from Poland, right? So we are hiring all around the world, especially when tech talent is concerned, right? It's really about the quality of your code and how well you work with the wider team. So for Singapore, tech talent will still be there. We're still hiring out of there. But for Malaysia, we also want to start our own thing with local projects and also group projects for them to work on. So all in all, it's about steadily building a practice, a business, and making sure, first and foremost, that clients are taken care of, clients are happy, and then, you know, we have the infrastructure to really, really grow. Because as I keep saying, we're doing very well in Malaysia. Our market share is actually very dominant, and we want to make sure that we take a bigger piece of the pie, right? Like in 2020, robo-advisors only had 600 million in assets under management, and that's a nice start. But when you look at the unit trust industry, when you look at cash, unit trust industry has 500 billion assets under management, with corporate money included, of course. And then in cash, there's 770, almost 800 billion in cash just sitting around, right? So we want to make a dent in that space, and then possibly also to get into different national pension scheme like sort of PRS and EPF. So we want to work towards that in a big way.
Fantastic. Sounds great. Sounds exciting. Plenty of things in store for you guys. Ken, I wish you a very selamat Hari Raya. Maaf Zahir Batin. And stay safe for everyone.
Yeah. Selamat Hari Raya, Ibrahim, and to our viewers as well. Stay safe, guys.
Selamat Hari Raya. Maaf Zahir Batin. Take care, everyone.